CITR.ca.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. LiveBand.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake. There's nothing more for any.
So welcome back. Today is Friday, November 11th, Canadian National Remembrance Day. Thank you to our veterans for your bravery and sacrifice for our country. I'm Sean Yoon.
And I'm Francesca Bianco. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to the listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5.09 p.m. and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
To start the show, we have a report by News 101 co-director Sahara Saf and myself, in which we spoke with Canadians and Americans as they reacted to the news of Donald Trump's victory on Tuesday night. Next, we have our very own Jay Clark, a UBC student and journalist, joining us live to discuss the unfolding of the election and the role of UBC's Free Speech Club at the International Lounge in the Student Nest.
Following that, we have Andrew Seal and Sharon Nadim interview Canadian veteran Luke Bokenfor about his thoughts on Remembrance Day.
Following that, we have reporter Edison Huang, who reports and interviews students on the recent TransLink regional development fee and recent efficiency of local transportation.
After that, we have a report by Sharon Nadim, Andrew Seal, and Flavia Santia on the recent protests spurring in Seattle in response to the Trump win.
To finish off our show, we have a weekly roundup of the top financial news stories this week by News 101's financial news reporter, Alex Norman.
But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, the AMS is lobbying the provincial government for more affordable education. they're making recommendations on the report for the provincial government's budget, focusing on three main things: operating grants, student loans, and the UPass program. AMS recommended that the provincial government ensure that per student operating grants increase annually by the same amount as the domestic tuition cap. AMS VP External Kathleen Simpson said, "The idea is to really balance the burden between the province and students. BC currently charges the highest student loan interest rate in the country at 2.5% plus prime. At UBC, 12% of students currently reported that they will not complete the program in 4 years due to a reduced course load for financial reasons. The AMS currently recommends a reduction in student loan interest as a first step in eliminating interest on student loans altogether. The UPass is essential for post-secondary students, which has been shown in the most recent UPass referendum, where 97% voted in favor of continuing the program. And finally, the AMS advocates for UPass to become a long-term priority by ending the current cyclical contract and instead develop a long-term standardized and affordable UPass program indexed to inflation." So another story from our campus news is UBC still won't have a fall reading break next year. UBC and McGill are now two of the last major universities to not have a fall reading break. In 2015, AMS pushed for a fall reading break and saw positive feedback from students and faculty. In an interview with the UBC, Lena Castro, last year's AMS Mental Health and Wellbeing Commissioner, said, "The highest traffic for counseling services is right around November and October. A short break in that time would be very beneficial for students." Following the push from AMS, Enrollment Services, the Senate's Academic Policy Committee, and the Senate ADHOC Committee are now teaming up to build a fall reading break policy for the university. Currently, the team is at the preliminary stage of reviewing the academic year's schedule and has yet to discuss any potential changes to the structure. The study report and the scheduling review have identified the main issue: the available number of teaching days. Since the number of days is determined by policy, having a break would require adding more time at the beginning or at the end of the term.
And in local news, hundreds gathered to protest yesterday in front of Trump Tower in downtown Vancouver. Crowds voiced their opposition to President-elect Donald Trump as they chanted, "Love Trump's hate" and "Down with Trump." Thousands have begun protesting in cities across the U.S., like Seattle, since Trump's victory in the U.S. presidential election on Tuesday. The 63-story Trump International Hotel and Tower was supposed to open this fall, but construction delays have pushed the opening to 2017. Supreme Court ruling will force BC to hire hundreds of teachers. The BC government will likely have to hire hundreds of teachers and spend between $250 million and $300 million more each year on education after the win by BC Teachers Federation and the Supreme Court of Canada on Thursday. The decision immediately restored clauses deleted from the teachers' contract by the Liberal government of Gordon Campbell in 2002, dealing with class size, the number of special needs students who can be in a class, and the number of specialist teachers required in schools. Canada's highest court, which often takes several months to deliver a decision, took only a 20-minute recess after hearing legal arguments before delivering a 7-2 decision in favor of the union. BCTF President Glenn Hansman said it could take some time to restore class sizes to pre-2002 levels because of the union has lost the equivalent of the 3,500 full-time positions over the past 15 years.
In national news, Air Canada bans its employees from wearing poppies, then reverses the decision after complaints. Air Canada quickly rescinded an edict barring employees from wearing Remembrance Day poppies while in uniform. An internal notice was sent out on Monday morning reminding staff that poppies are not allowed under the current company's uniform policy. Encouraging employees to wear poppies outside of work, Vice President of In-Flight Service Renee Smith-Valladay wrote, "As a company, we have chosen to show our deep respect and honor for our veterans with an onboard announcements on all flights worldwide." Coupes, Air Canada component, which represents flight attendants, received a flood of complaints from workers who were instructed to remove their poppies. Flight attendants have worn poppies in previous years without issue, and Air Canada has even painted poppies on the sides of its aircraft in the past. Additionally, many former military members now work at the airline. Announcing the reversal of the decision a few hours later, Smith Valaday posted, "The decision has indeed been reconsidered and the wearing of poppies is supported. My apologies for the angst this has caused for some." The Yukon Liberals have won a majority in territorial legislature. Liberal Party leader Sandy Sover is set to become the territory's 9th premier. Coming into the election as a third party with only one seat, the Liberals won 11 out of 19 seats in the territorial legislature. This ended the 14-year government by the conservative-leaning Yukon Party, who came out of the election with only 6 seats, five less than previously held. Incumbent Premier Daryl Pazlowski resigned as party leader after losing his seat. The territorial NDP moved from official opposition to third-party status, securing only 2 seats. This is the second chance for the Liberals to govern the territory, having previously formed government for a brief tenure between 2000 and 2002. Central to the Liberal campaign was a pledge to renew relations between the government and First Nations communities. The relationship between the government and First Nations has been very strained under the previous government. Silver has also pledged to reduce corporate taxes and eliminate the small business tax.
In international news, Republican candidate Donald Trump was elected the 45th president of the United States of America on Tuesday, defeating Democrat Hillary Clinton, who won the popular vote by roughly 200,000 ballots nationwide. His victory came after key wins in the battleground states of Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. Trump surpassed 270 electoral votes by winning several states that President Obama won in 2008 and 2012, including Iowa, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Polls prior to Election Day had shown Clinton ahead by a few points, though the expectation was that the race would be tight. Taking the stage early on Wednesday morning in Midtown Manhattan, Trump said, "I just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us on our victory, and I congratulated her on a hard-fought campaign." Clinton delivered her concession speech on Wednesday morning. She said, quote, "Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and a chance to lead." She was poised and dignified, even as she admitted how painful the defeat was for her. Less than 48 hours after Trump's win, there has been widespread reports of racist attacks and hate crimes across the U.S. There has also been mass protests in major cities, including Seattle, New York, San Francisco, and Chicago, with thousands of people marching on the streets chanting, "Not my president." While most of the demonstrations have remained peaceful, the protest in Portland, Oregon has taken a turn with property and vehicle destruction. Police are referring to it as a riot. Vancouver also saw its own anti-Trump protest yesterday, with protesters taking to the unopened Trump Tower on West Georgia Street. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has banned India's largest currency notes. In a surprise move on Tuesday, Narendra Modi banned the use of 500 and 1,000 rupee notes starting the next morning. The move will effectively remove 80% of the currency in circulation. Mr. Modi said that after Wednesday, people could exchange the banned notes for similar denominations or new 2,000 rupee notes that are being created. The ban is intended to curb flow of counterfeit money and to lock out money that is unaccounted for, referred to as black money. Finance Minister Arun Jaitley said that the move will robust Indian economy and its credibility on a global level. While some have commended the move, most Indians are scrambling to adjust to life without these notes. Some of the most affected are daily wage workers with no bank accounts or formal identification, as well as citizens living overseas. Those are your campus, local, national, and international headlines on News 101. We are going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments.
It's the biggest musical competition in the country.
CITR is hosting our 33rd annual Shindig. It's a battle of the bands at Pat's Pub every Tuesday night.
We've curated 27 rad bands to compete for the title.
Who will take the crown from last year's winners late spring? Come to find out. Fun fact, at this year's Shindig, there'll be fun facts for beers.
Thanks to this year's sponsors, AMS Events, Backline Musician Services, Canadian Music Week, Discorder, Vader Master Studios, Rain City Recorders, Mint Records, Music Waste, Nimbus Recording, Thunderbird Radio Hell, Sixcent Press, Silver Fox Postering, Band Merch Canada, Blue Light Studios, Zulu Records, Fernie Brewing, and Print Print.
Come out to Shindig this Tuesday, November 15th to see Pocket Milk, Crumb, and Devourers.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Right now, we have a report by News 101 co-director Sahara Saf and myself, Francesca, in which we spoke with Canadians and Americans as they reacted in the moment to news of Donald Trump's victory on Tuesday.
Canada and the United States, two countries that are intimately tied by economic relations, geography, and similar values. So naturally, many Canadians tuned in to a deeply divisive U.S. election campaign that came to a jaw-dropping end on Tuesday night. On election day, Francesca and I headed downtown to talk to people as election results rolled in and it became increasingly clear that Donald Trump would become the 45th U.S. president-elect. Here are some of the reactions.
I'm really hoping for a miracle. I think that I'm hoping that there is some sense of righteousness in the world where that equality and equal rights and everything are actually acknowledged instead of put back on the back burner.
Horrified right now.
Are you Canadian?
Yeah. Very anxious.
Have you been following the election?
I have actually, yeah. It was going to be like this.
I'm a little shocked. I thought Hillary was probably going to run away with it, and I'm still holding out hope that she's going to win, but definitely surprised that Donald Trump is putting in such a strong showing. It seems that there's a lot of really close calls, and a lot of states are really close, so I think the line is really close in a lot of states, so it didn't take a lot of votes to shift it.
I feel like the United States just ceased to be a force for good that anybody looks up to, and I think that in a way it's actually good the way it happened, because it's not like Donald Trump was, you know, being the silent conservative candidate and then people could be opposed to democratic rule or a woman in power and in the end they would vote against that and Donald Trump would emerge mm-hmm. as the next president. No, he showed them and the world exactly what kind of person he was. Mm-hmm. Anti-immigrants, sexist, everything, grab him by the pussy, everything. You know, he showed them, he showed the electorate and the world his ugly face. And they voted for that. So they knew exactly what kind of person they wanted for president, and they voted for that.
I kind of know who I want to win for their sake, but realistically, it's not really going to affect me a whole lot. It's not going to affect any of us. Wait, are you guys Canadian?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're good. We're good, right?
I really hope that I don't have to go back to the 1930s or be arrested in the future for having a medical procedure or not making enough money or just being degraded or just the simple fact of locker room talk is tolerated in the world.
They make a big impact in the world whenever anything is being done. They will be closely watched and they may lose some of the alliances that they've built up. I know that the state is in a time of transition. They're looking for some big change. That's apparent. All I can hope is that they will get the change that they need without it being so radical that it alienates them. They have been split by civil war in the past and it was not a good thing. still fresh in many people's memories.
And I'm having trouble articulating myself because it is so close right now. I'm hoping that, as Michelle Obama said, that people are aware that we need to keep on with the change in the world to get ahead, that we need to step forward instead of stepping back, and that, I think we can if we all stick together and work towards positive change. This is going to be a very big wake-up call for the world, the economy, for humanity, for women's rights, for people's ethnicity, everything. It's a turning point. And, I'm 43 years old, and I'm a female. I'm a carpenter in the film industry, and even myself every day face bumps in the road just for the fact that I'm a female.
It couldn't be any clearer to the world that you cannot rely on the United States anymore.
Thank you, Suher and Francesca. Now we have Jake Clark in studio live with our co-director, Nicole Stevens, to discuss the unfolding of the election and role of UBC's Free Speech Club at the International Lounge in the Student Nest on Tuesday night.
Thank you, Jake, for being here with us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. It really is, to disseminate this rather unfortunate little cluster of information.
Great. So, Jake, do you mind just recapping for our listeners here where you were on Tuesday night?
Certainly. I was at the International Lounge in Marine Drive, and the International Lounge was actually hosting a night where one could actually view the election on CNN Mobile.
This is the campus residence at the University of British Columbia.
Yes.
Marine Drive.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And there were multiple screens or multiple televisions viewing the election, as I said, on CNN Mobile. And the mood really did start with a slight bit of fear and apprehension, but later went into doom as these swing states that was mentioned before were lost. Ohio was one of them, so then Florida. And then after Pennsylvania, most of the people dispersed, myself included, which is about 11:30 at night, because that was when we realized that the 45th president of the United States is going to be Donald J. Trump.
And can you tell me a quick survey of who attended the viewing?
So there were a few American students there. I think it was a good proportion of American to Canadian students, or various exchange students, is very representative of UBC's actual makeup. Because there were a lot of people who had different vested interests in showing up there. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, why the mood dampened.
Can you name a few of those?
Certainly. There was an American fellow there from Colorado, actually. His name is Jackson. And I talked to him at length. He was a very, very good speaker, very, very well informed about the issue because he lived it. And he admitted that he comes from a very liberal part of the country, but that he never thought this was going to happen. I think you're going to hear that a lot in these next few weeks. He never thought it was going to happen. This was completely unforeseeable. It was, but that's what happens when news happens in an echo chamber. You're going to hear the word echo chamber a lot as well. And his analogy, this is a very good analogy, was he compared voting for Donald Trump as a screw you, which I think was what brought in the vote for him, to discharging a firearm in the air because you're annoyed at the line to an amusement park. It's a disproportionate solution to a very annoying problem, which is people feeling disenfranchised and ignored by the government around them. If you want a Canadian example of that, the Alberta NDP would be an excellent parallel there.
Okay. And you mentioned that people started to disperse. What time exactly would you say people really did give up?
11:30 was when everybody called it, because that's when the Clinton campaign gave up. That's when they told their supporters, who were at that point singing Don't Stop Believing, or were doing that beforehand, to stop believing and go home, because go get some sleep is the exact words. But they figured out, you know what, we're not going to have a victory party at the end of this. We're not going to keep you up through the night. So that was when we realized we should probably take their advice and go, and the people organizing the event thought that as well.
That's awesome. Thank you. Was there any other activism on campus you witnessed?
There was. The Free Speech Club was mentioned. And they weren't actually at the event, but they were actually out front of the Nest during the middle of the day, and they were selling Trump merchandise. Make America Great Again and Make Canada Great Again hats. And this...
Why do you think they would be selling merchandise, in particular support of a very unpopular leader in this election?
Exactly, because he's unpopular. Because their point was the role of free speech was to represent opinions that are unpopular, which is true, which is very true, because if you have opinions that are manifestly unpopular and taken as such, as taken for granted, that devalues the freedom of speech, because that's where censorship starts. It's where censorship and constriction of thought starts. But there, that was interesting. I found that to be rather ironic that it was Donald Trump, because Donald Trump does not respect free speech. He respects free speech insofar as it allows him to go on his rants and not to have to think about what he says, which is the opposite of what freedom of speech entails. Freedom of speech entails that you do still have to consider what you're saying. It just entails that you cannot be vilified outright for saying it. In Canada, we have hate speech legislation, which is still a very narrow subset of convictions. The Americans don't have that. And the role of free speech in the States has always been extremely well defended, because it's an amendment. It's the same reason, actually for the same reason their gun control is pretty backward facing, is because they adhere to the Constitution above all else and ignore the fact that it's a living document. And the Free Speech Club here, I think their point was more simple than that. Their main point is just Donald Trump is unpopular here. Their scope of action is here. And the specific words they had for that was, if Hillary was unpopular here, they'd be selling her merch, which I think is commendable. I don't know if it's true, but I think it's commendable that that was at least the venture there. But in terms of what actually happened and the apparent fact that he has an enemies list, yeah, Colbert had a good line for that one, actually. Zero to Nixon in no time at all. The critical thing was they didn't know Nixon was corrupt when they put him in power. Good Lord. But yeah, that was the observations on election day, which was a very long day for me.
For
and I think
us for, all.
For us
yes.
all, yes. And actually, the funny thing was, on my way back, I put in my headphones and first thing I put on was Democracy by Leonard Cohen, which was written for events just like this. It's a very cynical song. And when I found out he died later on, I was wondering, oh, God, he killed him. But it's one of those intersections of culture and causality that's just really hard to ignore.
Well, thank you so much, Jake, for stopping by and reporting on your observations of what's been going on campus in regards to this election. We will return back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Cheers.
Thank you, Nicole and Jake. Up next, we have Andrew Seal and Sharon Nadim interviewing Canadian veterans about their experience as we remember and reflect on this Remembrance Day.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. How are you today?
I'm good. Yourself?
Yes, you're doing well.
So we just wanted to ask you a couple of questions. Could you just start by telling us about your service with the Canadian Armed Forces?
Well, that would start with the fact that I actually wasn't in the Canadian Forces. Actually, I was in the British Forces. I was a Canadian, well, I am a Canadian, who went over to the British Armed Forces because Commonwealth soldiers can serve in the British Armed Forces, or at least they could at the time. I went over there and joined up in 2001 and served until 2011 over there in the Royal Marine Commandos. So I did five tours. I did Northern Ireland. 2002, I did the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and went back to Iraq twice after that, and did Afghanistan in 2008-2009. The last one was as a close combat section commander.
Okay, thank you. Having served in the military, what does Remembrance Day mean to you specifically?
For me, I remember my fallen comrades. I remember my brothers in arms, the guys who didn't make it home. There's four guys specifically that I remember every Remembrance Day, and they all died on my Afghanistan tour. It was four of them, and it was quite a. I think our company position. I was in a forward operating base in Helmand Province, and I think we got hit probably the most, we suffer the most casualties, and we were just surrounded by Taliban and IEDs, and it was quite a tough tour for that, losing friends. So for me, Remembrance Day is remembering those, as well as all the rest who have served and who have, you know, offered to stand in the way of those who would do us harm, right? Those others who would serve to protect the rest of us, to make sure we live with safety, and others as well. You know, the Afghans for one, right?
Yeah.
To give them a better life for one, right?
So there's a lot of history now behind Remembrance Day, but do you think it's still as significant for the generation today, for young people?
I think it's in living memory now with, like I say, recent deployments and stuff. There's a resurgence. We have actual combat veterans living among us. So you see, I know people see veterans plates. I've got veterans plates on my car. And they, you know, they look inside, they expect to see some, 90-year-old man, maybe, you know, some World War II vet. But I served 11 years, you know, on 5 combat tours. I'm a veteran. You know, and even if you haven't been in combat, you're still a veteran, right? If you've said, I will stand post, I will stand on the line, I will stand and be counted and serve, you're a veteran. So it's topical, I think, now. We remember, you know, out of World War I, we remember those who served and who sacrificed, significantly, obviously, larger casualties. It was quite bigger in people's minds at the time there, but I don't think it's lost its significance. We reflect on all of that, right? All those who served and pay the ultimate price. So I don't think it has lost its shine. I go to the cenotaph and I see people still respect. People still respect in all ages.
Right. Thank you. With everything that is happening in the world right now, how important do you think is Remembrance Day to help bring people together?
How important is it to help bring people together? Well, I think it is important. If you look at what's gone on in France and stuff like that, France has been hit quite hard the last few years. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to bring people together to remember. I think it's important to remember those who sacrificed, those who have given, like I say, paid the ultimate price. Bringing people together in remembrance, mm-hmm. So that we can prevent those who would do us harm, is a good thing. It's part of what binds us as a community, as a larger community, I think. It should stay, a topical, I don't want to say holiday, it's not a holiday, it's a topical a time, a day of remembrance. Mm-hmm. Today, report.
Do you have any specific message for everybody this Remembrance Day?
Any message? I would say just recognize those who step in for you and safeguard your rights. They don't come cheap. We have what we have because others have stood to protect it and still do stand to protect it. So remember, why you sleep warm in your bed and safe in your home, and that there are people who are willing to stand there and defend that for you. So that's all I would say. We don't want your praise or your thanks, but if it's only one day a year, maybe you can remember and pay respect.
And what will you be doing for Remembrance Day tomorrow?
I'll be going out to, I was asked to lay a wreath at UBC,
I'll be in my dress uniform. I'm a Vancouver police officer, so I'm going to be in my dress uniform, and I will be with my medals on, and I'll be laying a wreath, and I'll be there with some fellow veterans who have served in various different conflicts, and I'll be spending a few hours with them.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bookman, for thank you for talking to us today.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Andrew and Sharon. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments.
A stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for one.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. Won't you hear with me?
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the UBC in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us. Now we have Edison Huang reporting on the recent TransLink development fee and interviewing students to find out their thoughts on the efficiency of our local Vancouver transportation.
TransLink has proposed a regional development fee for the city of Vancouver. A background paper prepared by TransLink about the fee states that there will be a rate of $700 to $2,000 per new residential area that's built, and the fees will be used in order to improve bus service and improve the volume of buses on the streets. It's estimated that up to 100,000 to 120,000 hours of additional bus service will be added, as well as improving the infrastructure for SkyTrain and similar transport. Many TransLink officials say that the fees will not impact housing prices, but it remains to be seen because the fees will actually be implemented in 2020. In addition, the Mayor's Council is also proposing to increase transit fares and property taxes starting in 2017, and I sat down with Linda and Felix to discuss these new fares and find out what their thoughts are on this topic. I'm here with Linda Huang and Felix, and I'm asking them a bit about the TransLink Regional Development Fee. So where do you guys live, and how long do you guys take the bus usually for?
So for me, I live in New West, and my transit times are usually anywhere between an hour and 10 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on how busy it gets.
Oh, wow. And for me, I live in East Van, and for me, it depends if I get on the 41, it takes me about 15 minutes to go to school, but if I get lucky and go on an express bus, 43, then it'll take about 30 or 40 minutes.
I see. And how do you guys feel about the quality of the buses you guys take? Because I knew for the new B lines, the seats are a lot more comfortable with the foam cushions. Do you guys feel like there could be improvements in the terms of comfort and reliability on the bus?
I haven't really noticed too much of a difference for the new buses, actually. I feel like most of the ones I get on are the old ones, but in terms of, I have been on some of the new buses, like for example when I used to take the 49, and I think the new quality is nice, but it's not that necessary in my opinion.
I see.
For me, I get on the new buses as well as some of older buses, and the newer buses, they're more spacious, they just feel nicer in general, but it doesn't really change much as long as for us, we just need to get to school, so.
I see, that definitely makes sense. And I know that you can actually text the bus number or use an app to determine when the service will come or when the bus will arrive. Do you guys feel like this is reliable and the TransLink times given are correct most of the time?
No. I feel like a lot of students experience, like, not even myself, but I see a lot of things on Twitter of my friends who every time they text the bus, it doesn't come on time, and it's usually a lot later, or just there's events where buses come like two at a time, but then in between that time interval, you're waiting for a long time for the next one and stuff.
Yep, like what Linda said, it's very inconsistent. The times that are sent to your phone when you text the bus is not accurate most of the time, and you just end up waiting more than it says. And a lot of times I've noticed that a lot of the buses are clumped together, and like what Linda said, it's very, very annoying how the buses are scheduled like that.
I see, so it could definitely make a bit of improvement. And the plan actually proposes it will be another 100,000 or 120,000 hours of additional bus service. So that means the higher volume bus service will be implemented across the Lower Mainland. Do you guys feel like the $700 to $2,000 development fee for each house is justified in this case?
I think it's hard to argue, because maybe if they showed us a clear indication of how these hours are going to be spread out, because obviously certain buses are a lot more high traffic than other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, just seeing how that is proportioned or like distributed will be helpful indicator.
Sure. And what do you think, Felix?
On top of that, I think it would mostly benefit university students. Just students in general, but in terms of the general public, I don't think that would be fair, as most people who own a house probably own a car, so they that increase in price doesn't factor for how, like, the changes in the bus routes.
Yeah, it doesn't really directly benefit them.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I want to thank you guys so much for the interview and your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Edison. Now we have a report on the protests in Seattle from the outcome of the American elections by Andrew Seal, Sharon Nadim, and Flavia Santilla.
We were in class Wednesday morning reflecting on the results of Tuesday's elections in the United States.
The mood in class was tense and somber, and coincidentally, a surprising number of students were dressed in black.
We were put into groups to share and reflect on our thoughts and the possible consequences of the election.
Halfway through, our professor informed us that protests were erupting across the United States, mostly at universities, with protesters burning the American flag and Donald Trump's effigy.
I quickly went online and found that a protest was being organized in Seattle that was to begin at 4 o'clock.
It was 1:30 and we were still having lunch. Right after, we went and asked our professor if we could go and cover the protest.
She just said go, and we left immediately with our toothbrushes, passports, and every piece of recording equipment we had.
We got to Seattle just after 6:30. We were driving towards downtown when the protest was to take place, when we saw and heard several ambulances and police cars, as well as helicopters hovering above. There were flashing lights everywhere, with red and blue reflecting on all the buildings and windows.
We parked immediately and moved towards what seemed to be the epicenter of the commotion.
And that's when we saw the police yellow tape. We asked a few bystanders and found out that a mass shooting just happened, where five people got shot.
We waited around interviewing people, trying to find more information, when the assistant police chief gave his statement confirming the shooting, but also warning that the shooter was at large.
He explained that the shooting wasn't related to the protest and that the protesters had moved out of the area about half an hour before. After that point, every loud noise we heard was a gunshot. We were on edge and cautious and slightly scared, but we decided to go track down the protesters.
We drove around for an hour looking for the protesters. We were about to give up, get dinner, and go to our hotel when we heard on the local radio that the protesters were headed towards East Lake on Roanoke.
We drove straight to East Lake.
We knew we were headed in the right direction as we came across dozens of police vehicles driving in the same direction. We turned onto Roanoke and saw in front of us cops on bikes had just blocked the road.
Then all of a sudden, swarms of people came into view, marching on the street, chanting.
We We ran towards the protests, whipping out our phones and cameras, and we started recording.
We couldn't believe the number of people out there. There were thousands. We later found out that the actual police estimate was about 6,000.
We spoke to a few protesters. Here's what they had to say.
How did you feel when you saw last night happen?
Man, obviously very disappointed. I was a little apathetic going into it because I assumed Hillary had it won. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We live in such a liberal enclave here in Seattle that I had no idea that half the country felt like this. That misogynistic, racist, xenophobic asshole was better than Hillary Clinton or is the man to lead our country. Man, disappointing. I was at a place in Capitol Hill and you should have felt like as more results kept coming in, just the breath was taken out of people. And I don't know what you feel, man. I'm feeling anger and frustration and confusion and disappointment and just honestly shock. Like, I have a lot of friends abroad and I wrote them all this morning and I said sorry. Like,
yeah.
Please just remember, like, not all of us are like this.
Yeah.
Just a shame that this is the man that's going to represent the face of America now for the next 4 years. Right.
And how do you think that the country should go about reconciling from this? What do you think is going to happen now?
I don't think we should be thinking about reconciliation right now.
No?
We need to be angry. This is fucked up. This is a step back for our country. Everyone is talking about unity and let's reconcile and work together. Like, give us a moment to be frustrated and angry.
Yeah.
For half of the country, this is really fucked up. This is not a great thing that can happen. And, obviously, we're going to have to find a way to reconcile and move forward as a country, but it's going to be difficult.
My 7-year-old niece was last night.
Oh, my God.
She's 7 years old. And wow. She kept going to her mom, what's going to happen? He's a bad man. What's going to happen?
Oh, wow.
And my niece called me and said, what am I supposed to tell her? I said, just kind of calm her down and tell her that, you know, someday she'll be able to vote and change this.
Yeah.
What do you tell a 7-year-old scared of their president?
Yeah.
And how did you feel when you saw yesterday happen?
Disbelief. Anger that, you know, the polls said that Clinton had a lead and then Trump takes the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly terrified because I'm part of the LGBT community, so this could mean very bad things for me. Right.
Thank you, Sharon, Andrew, and Flavia. Now we have a weekly roundup by News 101's financial news reporter Alex Norman on the top financial stories this week.
This is the weekly financial update report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets. These are this week's top stories for Thursday, November 3rd to Thursday, November 10th, 2016. Global stock markets are up following the U.S. presidential elections. Canada Goose Inc. looks to go public. ESPN woes continue to plague Disney. And Vancouver gets creative in trying to solve its housing rental crisis. We begin today's news with global stock markets rallying this week as investors warm to the idea of a U.S. president-elect Donald Trump. The optimistic tone helped push the resource-heavy S&P/TSX Composite Index higher by 103 points. This was led by a strong rally in gold, metals, and the material sectors. After futures trading plummeted by as much as 800 points overnight, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up on Wednesday 1.4%. This is just a quarter of a percentage below the all-time highs set back in August. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composite Index both added more than 1% on Wednesday, while European shares also reversed earlier losses with the Euro Stoxx 50 and the FTSE 100 both adding about 1%. The German DAX also gained 1.6% following the U.S. election results. Brr! It's getting cold out there and Canada Goose Inc. looks to take off for the winter. Less than a month after opening its first store in Yorkdale Shopping Center, Canada Goose Inc. has chosen its bankers to lead its initial public offering, according to a Bloomberg report. Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse Group AG, and CIBC will lead the Toronto-based retailer's stock market offering. Sources close to the story say that shares in the company could be up for sale as soon as 2017. The news follows on the heels of a wildly successful IPO by fellow Canadian retailer Aritzia Inc. Aritzia was able to raise 400 million Canadian selling shares on the Toronto Stock Exchange in October, making it the largest Canadian IPO year to date. Canada Goose Inc., which is backed by the hedge fund company Bain Capital, plans to seek a valuation of about $2 billion. Did you see last night's ESPN highlights? Disney is hoping so. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that a decline in income at ESPN continues to overshadow quarterly results for parent company Walt Disney. ESPN, the sports powerhouse, posted a lower advertising and subscription revenue that dragged the company's earnings below Wall Street expectations. Operating income at Disney's cable network segment, which includes ESPN, fell 13% from this time last year to $1.45 billion. Disney says that a fall in ESPN's ad revenue was driven in part by a decline in fantasy sports advertising and more money flowing to rival NBC Universal during the Olympic Games. Disney's shares initially fell by 4% in after-hours trading on Wednesday night, but rebounded as chief executive Robert Iger told analysts during a conference call that he was, quote, bullish about ESPN's future. New ESPN deals with Hulu and AT&T could help the company attract the elusive millennial customer who are opting out of traditional cable packages. Quote, we believe new services will ultimately move millennials into the pay TV universe, said Mr. Ingles. Shares in Disney were up for the week, closing on Thursday at $94.96 for a 1.7% gain. It looks like the city of Vancouver is getting creative in trying to solve its housing rental crisis. Local radio station News 1130 is reporting that empty homes in Vancouver may face potential penalties as the city tries to tackle its dwindling vacancy rate for rental units. Vancouver City Council is set to vote on the new empty house tax as soon as next week. If approved, the tax, which would be 1% of the property's assessed value, would take into effect January 1st, 2017, and payments would be due in the following year. The tax will be applied to homes or residential land that sit empty for six or more full months in a year. Those exempt are snowbirds, people doing major renovations, registered owners undergoing medical care, and property in probate or under court order. Registered owners who use the property for 6 months of a year for work purposes but claim principal residence elsewhere will also be exempt. Quote, the city of Vancouver is in a rental housing crisis. The city will not sit back on the sidelines while over 20,000 empty homes and underoccupied properties are held back for renters struggling to find an affordable and secure place to live, said Mayor Gregor Roberts. Property owners who fail to pay the tax on time will face an extra 5% late penalty. Making a false declaration will result in a $10,000 a day fine. In other market news, these are this week's numbers. Toronto's S&P TSX Composite Index was up 1.1% for the week to close at 14,583 points on Thursday. The broader S&P 500 index posted a gain of 3.78% on the week to close at 2,164 points. The Nasdaq closed higher for the week with a gain of 2.89%. In the European markets, the German DAX closed up 2.95%. In the Asian indices, the Japanese Nikkei posted a gain of 2.93%, and the Shanghai Composite Index was up 2.17% for the week. In the commodities market, December gold futures closed down this week at $1,264 an ounce, while the December crude futures were also down this week 0.44% to close at $44.55 a barrel. In natural gas, December contract futures are down 5.43% to close at $2.65 a unit. In the bond market, yields for 10-year Canadian bonds are currently at 1.429%. U.S. 10-year Treasury yields closed higher this week at a rate of 2.1501%. This has been the Weekly Financial Update Report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets.
Thank you, Alex. That's our program for your Remembrance Day episode this November 11th. Today's newscast was brought to you by talented volunteer efforts. If you would like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our Facebook, Twitter, or email us at news@citr.ca.
You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/radio/news-101. You can also find great content on our SoundCloud and Mixcloud pages. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Francesca.
And I'm Sean Yoon. Today's broadcast was produced by Suhair Asaf and Nicole Stevens. From the entire news team at CITR, thank you for listening. We'll end tonight's show with Democracy by the late Leonard Cohen, a Canadian artist who passed away yesterday.
from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
the reefs of greed, through the squalls of heat. Sail on. If you know what I mean, I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right, I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags of time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Jim has a head full of crockery bits. His hair hangs over his eyes. Tenderfoot beer in a Mexican glass. Someone is troubling the parson. Spun like a spur on the boot of St. Michael. One beauty wrestles another. Sic transit gloria mundi on Monday. Rest of the week is for dancing. Spun like a spur on the boot of St. Michael. One beauty wrestles another. Sic transit gloria mundi.